welcome to another program of Soft Warfare. My name is Melanie Farrugia, and I will be your hostess during the programs, which are being brought to you by the History of Art Department, University of Malta, under the coordination of Dr. Giuseppe Scamri Bonacci, who is also the Artistic Director of the Imlina Biennale 2015. Welcome to episode 6 of the series. Today we will be talking about smoking, or different types of tobacco if you like, and of course we will be mentioning different types of tools designed for the intake of these various kinds of tobacco. We will be discovering more about the Zippo lighters, smoking pipes, snuff and the snuff bottles, and the Swedish snus. And if we are smoking, well, we do need a very particularly designed ashtray.
How you doing out there?
So let's start by lighting a cigarette. Of course, a simple matchstick can do the trick. But from all the various kinds of lighters, I chose the Zippo brand of lighters to start our program today. The first image on the website shows the iconic Zippo lighter. I'm sure many of you have seen this kind of lighter, which is almost always the same shape, but it is embellished in probably thousands of designs. Of course, there are the collectible Zippo lighters as well, and image number 2 shows the limited edition for the 2015. It is called the Full Circle. Zippo owner George Duke personally selected this design, created by his son Grant, fourth generation member of the Zippo family. The design is an outstanding example of the philosophy behind every Zippo lighter. The infinite repetition of an engraved, never-ending spiral represents the reusable nature of the product, as well as the passing of the flame from generation to generation in the Zippo family. A brass insert, consecutive numbering and unique bottom stamp authenticate this Zippo limited edition. So how did this iconic lighter make it to history? It was designed in 1933 by George G. Blaisdell, who decided to create an attractive, affordable lighter that was guaranteed to work under almost any conditions. The Zippo lighters have a rectangular shape, spring-loaded flip-top, and a protective windshield. The motto for the Zippo lighter was, "It works, or we fix it for free." During World War II, George Blaisdell dedicated his entire production run to the US military, making the lighter in steel rather than brass with a black crackle finish. And during this period, the Zippo became quite the hero in some stories, like that the Zippo held in the soldier's shirt pocket deflected a potentially fatal bullet, or that the Zippo saved the day when the soldier used it to heat up some soup in an upturned helmet. The Zippo made it to quite some movies as well, like Never So Few with Frank Sinatra, starring as a soldier fighting in Burma.
The unsung heroes of adventure in faraway places had one more name, Captain Tom Reynolds.
I kissed you, lady, and you kissed me back. I got the message.
Never So Few is vivid human drama boldly set against the exotic lands of India and Burma.
Now I would like to mention smoking pipes, and as one can imagine, this topic is quite extensive, so we will be mentioning few important styles that are associated with Malta. Palazzo Falson Historic Museum House in Imdina, back in 2010, did a fantastic exhibition about pipes called From Habit to Art, curated by Dr. Francesca Balsan. And in fact, I shall be reading very small abstracts from a study done for this exhibition. The full essay of the study about pipes and more info about this exhibition can be found on the Palazzo website, which is palazzofalson.com. And since we are mentioning Palazzo Falson, one should mention a little gossip about the last owner of the Palazzo, Captain Olaf Golscher, who was an avid pipe smoker and collector of a number of unusual pipes. He was also part of a confraternity called La Confraternita della Pipa, and you can have a look at image number 3 on the website. And this brotherhood used to meet in an underground premises in Rome. But I am not gonna tell you more about this curious confraternity, and if you want to know more, well, you will have to look up the interesting essay from the palazzofalson.com website. I have also inserted the link for this essay in the Program 6 tab on the website. First, I will give you a short overview of how this habit of smoking pipe started around the world. The story of pipes and smoking in Europe commences in the 16th century, when the tobacco plant was first imported from the New World. But the origin of pipes is buried far deeper than the European story leads us to believe. One of the oldest pipes known comes from Ecuador and dates from the 5th to 3rd century BC. Tobacco is indigenous to Central America, and it is from here that the earliest forms of pipe smoking emerged. Once the tobacco plant was brought to Northwest Europe, a pipe industry sprang up in the Netherlands, particularly in Gouda, and from here the habit spread to the rest of Europe. In the same period, tobacco was brought to England from America, and the production of pipes, albeit on a smaller scale, commenced. And now let's discover more about pipe smoking in Malta. Tobacco smoking was introduced in Malta around the first quarter of the 17th century. Pipes which can be associated most clearly with Malta can be organized roughly into three categories: the Tal Asba, reed or chibuk pipe, the briar wood pipe, and the large wooden painted souvenir pipes. The Tal Asba pipe, which you can see at image number 4, consists of a pipe bowl made of fired clay, generally mold-made, and which comes in a variety of plain or decorated shapes, to which is attached a reed or bamboo stem. Sometimes, and particularly if the smoker belonged to the higher classes of society, a separate mouthpiece would be added. Representations of smokers throughout the centuries show varying lengths of cane, from the longest, which, well, were over a meter in length, generally smoked by the Orientals, and required the pipe bowl to be rested on the floor, with the smoker sitting cross-legged in front of it, to the short cane stem, which we have now come to associate with more recent forms of pipe, and which was more practical, of course. Unlike the Tal Asba type of pipes, wooden pipes were actually made in Malta on an industrial scale. Mostly using briar wood, these pipes were produced by the British Empire Pipe Co. Limited, which eventually changed name to Briar Pipe Works Limited. An image of one kind of briar pipe can be seen at image number 5. The process of turning a piece of briar wood root into a pipe consists of the boiling of the root and seasoning for months. This is followed by the process of cutting. The pipe is later fitted with a mouthpiece, and the pipe undergoes finishing to its body, followed by staining and varnishing and polishing. Briar wood is very hard, which limits the possibilities for decorative carving. The shape of wooden pipes, however, does vary, and certain shapes have been associated with particular names. Briar Pipeworks Limited have also invented their own designs, such as the foldable breast pocket pipe and the torpedo pipe. Moreover, this factory has created another unique pipe type, made of Maltese olive wood. Some Maltese pipes, though functional, were actually produced as decorative or novelty pieces, as can be seen in image number 6. Now we will meet Lee Marvin Shkembri, who is the president of the Pipes Club Malta. Thank you for joining us today. You are the president of the Pipes Club Malta. I guess all the members of the club have an obvious hobby in common. Can you tell us something about this club?
This club started about 2 years ago. It started by me and Janella Borch. It was both of our dreams to start a club in Malta for the pipe connoisseurs. And we established this club Malta Pipe Club. And about 2 years ago, we had our first event. This was very successful. We had around 15 people for the first time, which was a big number for us. And since then, we kept on doing a lot of events.
Yeah, maybe you can tell us something about coming events or something that you have been organizing very recently.
Yes, of course. Normally, our biggest event is on the 20th of February, which is the IPSD, it's the International Pipe Smoking Day.
Okay.
This is a big event that a lot of countries all over the world, they celebrate. We just had our own, which was quite a big event. It was very successful. We had a lot of newcomers, a lot of young people as well. And let me just let you know that the pipe is not an addiction, it's a hobby.
Yeah, so I have been mentioning to our listeners some of the designs of the first pipes that we had in Malta. However, it would be great to know something about designs that are being created nowadays. So I have a couple of questions for you. So are there any particular designs that it's worth of mentioning for our listeners?
Yes, of course. Lately, one of the biggest designs that I've seen a hit of is the Church Warden. This is the long pipe that we see in the movie Lord of the Rings.
Ah, okay.
So a lot of people are going for those pipes.
Maybe we can add a picture of this on our website so that...
Of course, definitely. Just to let people know, the design of the pipe doesn't change the smoke or the feeling of the smoke. Although, a lot of people tend to find different pipes to their... liking.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone has their own style, everyone has their own favorite pipes. If I like a retro pipe, other people would probably like a modern pipe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the design itself that makes the aroma or the flavor or the smoking enjoyment of the pipe.
Okay.
It's the actual tobacco that gives
the variety of the tobacco, which is makes the difference.
Exactly.
Okay, so the design basically is mostly just aesthetics, as you're telling us. I'm not a pipe smoker, so I don't really know, but I always thought maybe there are so many different styles because, I don't know, it gives you a different feeling when you're smoking this pipe.
Mainly from a design, the only thing that you get is the time of the smoke.
Okay.
So if you want, and a lot of people would tend to have more than one or two pipes because they would have different varieties. And these pipes, mainly, they would have a bigger bowl, let's say. So it's just more tobacco. So
okay.
If you've got 2 hours of relaxation, you tend to choose a bigger bowl to smoke your pipe in.
Good.
Although a bigger bowl can always be filled half, but a smaller bowl, you can't overfill it.
Exactly.
Because, you can't smoke a pipe with tobacco outside. Then there is certain pipes, if the pipe is thick and chunky, it will have a cooler smoke. Although if the pipe is a bit thinner, as in the wood is thinner, then the smoke would be a bit hotter. Because it's affecting more, it's getting more wind around it, and so it would the smoke itself would be a bit hot. So a lot of people rather choose thicker pipes, like chunky pipes.
Okay,
and they feel
no
more comfortable in the hand.
Well, that's very interesting, and surely not many people know these details.
Yes, a lot of people, they ask, what pipe should I buy?
Hmm.
First of all, pipes vary a lot. You've got the main pipe you will find is made out of the briar wood, and then there are some pipes which are made out of olive wood as well. One of the cheapest pipes you can buy is made out of corn. They're called corn cobs, and you can find some merchant pipe. Merchant pipe are these white pipes. I can go into detail maybe another time, but this time I won't. So if you're buying your first pipe, I would always recommend that a person, instead of spending too much on one pipe, they buy two pipes, because a pipe should be smoked only once every 24 hours. So you need to give it a break. And if you're choosing a shop where you're going to buy your first pipe, mainly this person would advise you and guide you to one of the better fights. And the fight is chosen not by the look, but by the way the briar is made. As I told you, the main fight is a briar fight. Now, the more the briar is old, the more expensive the pipe is going to be. And the older the briar is, the older the wood is, the longer the pipe is going to last you. And that is the difference between the prices, because some pipes that you can buy them from 30 euro, and nowadays you can buy pipes over 1,000 or 2,000 wow. euro. So it makes a lot of difference. You can see two of the same pipes. One would cost about 80 euro, but the other one would cost 1,000 euro. Hmm. And this is because of either the carver who carves it, they charge a lot, or else the age of the briar.
That was really interesting. If someone wants to join your club or wants more information, can you give us a website or a Facebook page?
Yes, of course. So the name of the club is actually Malta Pipe Club. We are on Facebook, of course. It's a closed group, so if you don't want to share your pictures with all the world, you can be safe about that because it's a closed group. We will accept you once you join in. I will insist no one can join the group if you're under 18.
Okay.
If you want to ask any questions, feel free to go on the Facebook page, send us a message, and we'll get back to you. A lot of people are veterans nowadays in our club, and they will definitely help them with the choice of tobacco and their pipe.
Okay.
And the most important thing is always ask how to fill and how to maintain the pipe. Because as I told you, the pipe is not a cigarette, so you need to learn how to maintain it and how to fill it and how to smoke it.
Yeah, so much information. And as I told the listeners before we contacted you, if we had to say everything about pipes, we would need more than a whole program. Just about pipes. So, Lee Marvin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
And thanks for sharing all this very interesting information.
We'll be looking forward to see you and your listeners in our event and on our Facebook page.
Okay, thanks a lot. Our next topic is snuff. What is snuff? Snuff is a smokeless tobacco made from ground or pulverized tobacco leaves. It is inhaled or snuffed into the nasal cavity, delivering a swift hit of nicotine and a lasting flavored scent, especially if flavoring has been blended with the tobacco. Traditionally, snuff is sniffed or inhaled lightly. Well, this is done by holding a pinch of snuff between the thumb and the index finger onto the back surface of the hand. And you sniff it. Of course, this snuff comes in normal tin boxes or circular containers, but I would like to mention Chinese snuff bottles. And a number of these belong to the Swedish Museum of Design in Gothenburg, the Roschko Museum. And I shall be giving you some information about these bottles from the following website. Roschka.se. It is spelled R-O-H-S-S-K-A.se. So, the Roschka Museum have over 100 snuff bottles. I have included some images under the section snuff on the website, which I remind you, melfarrugia.wix.com/savoirfaire. Despite Chinese snuff bottles being a popular collector's item since the end of the 19th century, little is known about this category of artifacts. The earliest known dated snuff bottle is from around 1650, and they were made in bronze. Production of snuff bottles was particularly intensive during the Qing dynasty, from the 1644 till 1912, and peaked during the 1700s. Smoking tobacco was prohibited, but snuff was permitted because the Chinese used the dried, finely ground tobacco leaf as a cure for colds and headaches, as well as for stomach problems and when giving birth. Snuff was regarded as a cure-all. Medicine was often stored in bottles in China, so it was natural for snuff to be stored in them as well. Slightly larger bottles were used at home, and smaller ones could be carried in the robe's wide sleeves, or held in the hand. Some bottle shapes feel extra tactile and lie comfortably in the hand. The sizes of the Chinese bottles have remained the same over the years, but the materials, shapes and ornamentation have varied a lot. By the end of the 17th century, snuff-taking had become an important part of upper-class rituals. The Chinese manufactured snuff bottles in most materials, including amber, glass, jade, porcelain and coral. Most of the more exciting materials, such as mammoth teeth, ivory, shell and fossils, appeared during the 1800s and were little used. The stopper and the small snuff spoon were often made in a different material to the bottle, such as coral. In the early 1700s, the Chinese succeeded in manufacturing snuff bottles of good quality glass. A Chinese specialty was painting inside of the glass. The surface was prepared with an oxygenated powder, after which the inside was painted using an extremely thin brush through the bottle's neck. This technique was developed at the end of the 1700s, and schools were established in the 19th century, to which several known artists can be linked. One way of representing the seabed and providing an illusion of seaweed was painting the fish inside a bottle of clear quartz with inlaid tourmaline. One such snuff bottle can be seen under the snuff images on the website. And this one, of course, shows a fish, some text in Chinese, and random seaweed floating around. Snuff bottles are still manufactured today. There are many collectors of these small, glittering and exquisite objects of craftsmanship, but it is the bottles from the Qing dynasty that are mostly sought after. From the world of snuff, we move to a very similar product, which is the Swedish snus. And from the same city of Gothenburg, I went to meet Måns Eriksson, who will be telling us some information about snus. So, Måns, how are you today?
I'm doing all right, thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Maybe we can start by understanding what is the difference between snus and snuff.
Okay, snus, it's a lot more moist than snuff, and it actually goes under your lip instead of inhaling it through the nose.
And if one would want to buy snus, there is a variety, right?
Yeah, you have your two basic varieties. There's one which comes prepackaged into little sachets, and there's the loose snus, which you have to yourself shape into a ball and put it under your lip.
Well, that looks a bit messy. Actually, we have a couple of pictures for those following us on the website. You can see the version which comes in two sachets and the loose version. Mons, I know that someone did design something to prevent this messy situation when you're rolling your own ball of snus.
Yeah, so your fingers, they can get a bit dirty if you have to roll these balls yourself. So what people started doing was that they cut the top off of a syringe and packed the snus into it, and then with the syringe they put it under their lip, and thus no dirty fingers.
Yeah, that looks like being at the dentist almost. Hans brought with him a version of this snus portioner, it's called. And, well, the version that we're looking at, well, it looks, as Mons described, looks like a half a syringe. It's in nice polished stainless steel. And it's a very pretty gadget, I must say. And it fits nicely in your pocket.
Yeah,
like having a packet of cigarettes, basically. Okay, and yeah, I added a picture of this snus portioner on the website for those following us. So thank you, Måns, for joining us today and for sharing this useful information.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Again, I would like to thank Måns for joining us, and I take this opportunity to send my regards to his mom, Dr. Karen Toren, and her husband, Dr. Ingmar Hedman, who follow this program all the way from Sweden, through the podcasts, which you can find at the following website, MaltaUniversityBroadcasting.com, and click on webcasts, and from there you can choose Savoir Faire.
Now there's three cigarettes in the ashtray.
And our last item for today is also from Sweden and was made in the 1970s. This is a special ashtray called Altima 15. The designers, Holger Bäckström and Bo Ljungberg, were among the first to successfully use computer automation in the Art Deco field. Their resulting work is artful and practical. The Altima ashtrays can conveniently accommodate many different sizes of cigars, cigarettes and incense, with grooves and a patented smokeless compartment to tame the unpleasant results of indoor smoking. So let me try to describe this ashtray to you. Well, an easy way would be to imagine a large Lego piece, and on the face of the Lego piece, in the grooves section, there are holes where the cigarettes are inserted. It comes in various colors, and you can have a look at an image of this ashtray by checking out the last image for today on the program 6 tab. And I would like to mention a small note about Bäckström and Ljungberg, as their collaboration is quite a complex one, I must say. Holger Bäckström was one of a dozen artists who opened the 1964 Artoteket Art Gallery in Malmö, Sweden. Artoteket was an attempt to establish a local platform for young artists in Malmö, and along with a handful of other galleries, it became an important meeting place in the city. Bäckström was at this time to be reunited with his childhood friend, Bo Ljungberg, who for a time worked in Stockholm and became very knowledgeable in the field of mathematics. In 1965, Holger Bäckström and Bo Ljungberg established their company name as Beck & Ljung. Their goal was to combine their mutual interests in both design and mathematics in a joint project. Ljung was not a trained designer, but had worked as a technical professional. By making use of mathematical calculations while investigating the aesthetics of random geometric shapes, Ljungberg was able to inject a mathematical order into the direction of the company's design. What ended up as an experiment in mathematics and design became a lifelong collaboration.
Smoke that cigarette.
That was all for today. I hope you enjoyed the program. This program was brought to you by the History of Art Department, under the coordination of Dr. Giuseppe Scambri Bonacci, the Artistic Director of the Invina Biennale 2015. And I remind you that our next event of the Invina Biennale is a jazz evening with the Chilean jazz singer Miriam O, accompanied by guitarist Mark Gallia, at Django Jazz Bar in Valletta, 10th March, 8:30 p.m. See you next week.